Ea Ea Wendigos and Happy New Year. We've laid the ghost of 2016 to rest, and I think we're all hoping beyond hope that it stays buried where it belongs. I intend to make the most of the rest of the holiday before classes start back up by taking it easy. Unlike a certain lacrosse player I know who decided to belly flop off the roof of the ironclad at the Friendsmas celebration. Sorry, Tay. Better luck next time, and I hope your leg heals up faster than your ego. A new year means new beginnings, but I'm fine with starting things off the way we always do. Hey there, Caller One.
Hey, Morningwood. I've got a bit of a pickle. Or maybe I should say a bone to pick.
Ooh, dirty laundry? Do tell. MW loves her some cheese man first thing in the morning.
Okay, so like, I'm a student worker at this office on campus, and I'm not exactly rolling in cash, right? I mean, I've got student loans to pay off when it's all over, but some jackass keeps eating my food out of the fridge.
Oh, that's no good. Fridge grub is sacred.
I've tried writing my name on it, licking it, and even trying to catch the jerk, but no one's even managed it yet. And all my coworkers swear it isn't them.
Well, I'm not going to suggest any of the WHAU-approved methods for theft prevention, seeing as at least a couple of them are prohibited by the Geneva Convention. But have you considered going to your superiors, getting some intervention?
I did once. They put up warning signs, but he left my empty yogurt cup waiting for me. He's sick, Morningwood. Honestly, I think it might be that freak from engineering, but I'm not sure yet. Please, give me an idea. I'll do anything.
Anything?
Uh-huh.
Xlax.
Isn't that super illegal?
Absolutely, yes. That is entirely illegal, and if you do it, you're going to be in serious trouble. Probably involving security and the dean.
So?
Your hands are tied, caller. You can't win every battle. Get a lockbox for your food.
Point taken. Thanks, MW.
Glad I could be of service. Speaking of service, that brings me to our special guest in the studio today. Alexandria University's Honors College has a long-standing tradition of service, excelling not just academically, but also socially and in their philanthropic endeavors. Today, WHAU welcomes two representatives from the Honors College to the station for a Q&A session on their upcoming job fest. Come on in and have a seat. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Charlotte Adams, Honors College Student Body President.
Keel.
Keel is one of our first years, and he's pre-med here at AU, and we're both just so excited to be here.
That's great, Charlotte. I have to admit, I was a little surprised when Dean Flate emailed me to set up this meeting. I don't think we've had a representative from the Honors College into the station since before the incident, I guess.
Dean Higgins thinks the Honors College would benefit from some more outreach opportunities with the general student body. He's so considerate of them like that. Isn't that right, Keel?
Great. Just great.
Wasn't there an Amanda Monday who was supposed to be here with you? Maybe there's a mistake on my itinerary?
No, you're absolutely right. Amanda was supposed to be accompanying me today, but her doctors diagnosed her with walking pneumonia, and she's been forcibly confined to bed rest. Shame. She's going to miss the job fest, but I guess just some of us can't always be at our best after all. Luckily, I found Keel in the Honors College parlor, so I brought him along.
She sure did.
You guys have a parlor? What's even in a parlor?
Never mind that. Confidentiality, you know?
But if we're not supposed to know what's in the Honors College, how do you expect members of the general student body to find their way to the job fest?
OMW, I can see why they say you're so funny. You kind of are a welcome distraction from studying. Well, almost. Anyway, to answer your question, we don't.
Don't what now?
We don't expect them to find their way to the job fest. It's an Honors College exclusive event. Shh.
But you're announcing it on the radio.
Oh yes, Dean Higgins insisted. He's so funny. I think we've all largely enjoyed having a dean with such a good sense of humor, wouldn't you say, Keel?
Oh yeah, he's hilarious.
I'm afraid I don't get the joke.
Well, that's okay. See, the Honors College serves a function within the student body at large. We serve as examples. The Honors College is like a goal to be aspired to, a new level to reach, a height to be ascended. It's not for just anyone, of course. No offense. Anyway, as a result, our position entitles us to certain perks. For example, did you know that 9 out of 10 broken spears are recruited from the ranks of the Honors College?
The spears? You mean the secret society everyone knows about? Those douchebags and imitation Native American windbreakers who walk around campus with their mom's lipstick all over their faces, beating on a drum?
Yes, very funny. As I was saying, the spears regularly find new members among the Honors College. There's no surer way to be offered the highest honor any Wendigo could ever imagine. The kinds of professions that will be represented at the job festival probably wouldn't appeal to the average AU student, anyway. We'll be seeing investment bankers, CEOs, lobbyists...
Sounds like the Star Wars cantina.
Sorry? I'm afraid I don't follow.
You know, no greater den of vice and villainy... Never mind. That's all the time we've got tonight. Thanks, Charlotte and Kiel, for coming by to speak with us about the Honors College Job Festival, which we are not invited to.
Oh, it was our pleasure!
Crazy ass.
What was that?
See ya, Morningwood.
Well, that was quite the visit, Wendigos. Much thanks to Dean Higgins and the Honors College for reaching out to us lesser beings. In the spirit of exclusivity, I've got just the right file from the Alexandria Archives for you all tonight. I had almost forgotten all about it. It reached us tied around a brick which was tossed through the station window a couple years ago. We figured it had something to do with our loss against LSU, but it makes for a riveting tale on a night like tonight. I hope you'll all enjoy it.
The blindfold itched, and I wanted desperately to scratch my nose, but Tweedledee and Tweedledouche held my arms tight on either side as they led me along. I couldn't see a damned thing. It smelled like watery shit all around me. My blindness magnified every sound I could hear, even over my ragged breathing. The ground was springy and squelched wetly beneath my feet. I started to worry that the hands gripping me beneath each armpit were going to start to pull hair out. Somewhere close by, I heard the flat ticking of an insect that was probably bigger than my hand. I could just barely make out the quiet steps of the procession behind us. Every so often, someone hit a bass drum with a single rhythmic thump. The sound of it echoed hollow into the distance. My neck whipped forward as my guards lurched to a stop, turned me around, and ripped my blindfold off with a final resonant thump of the drum. I could finally see them. The broken spears. They stood all around me in a wide crescent. They wore the hoods of their ceremonial robes pulled up over their heads and mock Native American chess pieces. The faces I could see were streaked in red, an imitation of war paint. All around us stretched muck and marsh for as far as the eye could see. I recognized the looming cypress trees, made out a whiff of pine somewhere close by. I was in a swamp. The great, dismal swamp. I'd been dragged out of bed in the middle of the night to be brought to the great, goddamn, dismal swamp. The Tweedles finally let me go and moved to stand on either side of the guy who made up the center of the crescent. Now that I could get a good look at them, I saw they were your typical knuckle-draggers. All brawn and no brain. The kinds with muscles on every extremity, including their foreheads. Football, probably, or, I don't know, maybe lacrosse. Either way, they made the little guy between them look even smaller by comparison. But him I recognized immediately. Jacob Monroe, student chieftain to the Broken Spears. There was nothing particularly remarkable about Jacob. Even his voice when he spoke was high and nasally. Listening to it kind of made me cringe. "Samuel Friedman," he announced, self-important and wheezing from our hike. "On this day, November 14th, 1999, you have been found worthy of the trial for the ranks of the Broken Spears. This we say as one."
"We say as one,"
the semicircle of spears repeated, even though it was kind of cheesy. I couldn't help shivering just a little bit. Jacob's skinny chest puffed as he went on. "You have proven yourself academically, altruistically, and socially as an exemplar member of the Alexandria University community. There is but one last rite you must pass to earn this, the highest of honors, to consider yourself one of us."
"One of us,"
repeated the crowd. Now I couldn't just blame the muggy air around me for the sweat that dripped down my forehead. Jacob indicated the clearing around us with a broad, sweeping gesture. We were on a solid patch of muddy ground. Beyond it, the trees grew fewer and far between before giving way to black water. I fidgeted a little at the thought of it.
"You have been summoned, Samuel Friedman, for the test of courage. You have been brought here to the Great Dismal Swamp, where you will remain until sunrise. But heed the sacred circle."
Wait, the what now? I looked again and managed to spot it just before this wisecrack escaped me. A circle of branches ringed the sandy terrain, sprigs of short, sharp leaves broken at intervals by... what were those, candles?
"Juniper,"
Jacob explained, sounding a little smug. Something about his face was just punchable.
"The Indian tribes who hunted this land used it for purification. And fire. It's the only protection you'll have between you and anything that might be lurking in the shadows. So stay within the circle, and you might just survive the night. Leave the circle, and may the swamp have mercy on you. If you succeed, you will demonstrate to the Brotherhood of the Broken Spears that you possess the tenacity, strength, and fortitude to join the lineage tracking back to our elder, Elliot Pritchard, founder of Alexandria University and first of the Spears. Samuel Friedman, do you accept this challenge?"
I was standing in front of a crowd of the most prestigious students on campus in my pajamas, like my fifth grade nightmares had come to life. I had no idea where the road back to campus was, and it was somehow both muggy and so cold that my nipples could cut glass. It wasn't like I had many options here. "I do," I answered, and hoped my voice was steadier than I felt. And just like that, they turned around and walked away. Just walked away. The sound of the drum faded into the dark, and that was it. I was alone. I could have gone to UMiami. I could have been on a sandy beach getting high with all the beautiful people. But I had to go to AU. I had to be a Wendigo. Yeah, Wendigos! And it hadn't been enough to stop there. Not once I learned they had themselves a fancy little secret society. As soon as I heard about the Spears, it was all over. I had to be one of them. It had taken nearly 3 years of hard work, but I was finally in. I was so close I could taste it. Or maybe it was just some swamp gas, I don't know. All I had to do was sit balls deep in alligator hunting grounds. All night. In November. Fuck. Thankfully, the moon was full, and I saw enough of my surroundings to feel at ease. The buzzing hum of cicadas droned, monotonous and strangely comforting all around me. I plodded along a bit inside the magic circle until I reached a thick log and took a seat. The wet absorbed by the log over however many years immediately soaked the seat of my pants. The sickly moisture made my skin crawl. "I guess that's why they call it waterlogged, eh? Eh?" Yeah. From somewhere off in the distance there came a rustling as if from some small woodland creature I must have startled. Then there was the hoo of an owl followed by a tiny screech. Ah, damn, had I just gotten Thumper killed? Nature sucks. I looked at my wrist just to remember I wasn't wearing a watch. It was just me and my pal, crippling fear of loneliness. That same fear kept me from putting my finger in my nose or my hand in my pants. The Spears might be watching after all. But at least I was going to make it, I reminded myself. Right, buddy? Right. Spend the night sitting around in the cold? Bring it on. It was almost comically easy. Sure, it would have been nice if they had waited until, I don't know, spring to kidnap me, but no big. I had only myself to blame. Me and my shitty decision-making skills. Self-destructive, the therapist called it. The more I was told I couldn't have a thing, the more I wanted it, whatever the consequences. To be honest, I was more pissed about the boredom than the cold. I tried to pass the time by drilling myself for some upcoming Orgo final less than a week ahead. I drummed the tune to the AU fight song on my knee. I wondered if the stuck-up redhead in my British lit class would look at me any differently when I walked in on Monday with a Spears jacket. I honestly don't know how long I'd been sitting on my wet ass, mumbling to myself before I finally noticed the sound. Or more like total lack of sound. The woods had gone completely silent. No buzzing, no rustling, no hooing, no nothing but my own breathing and the blood rushing in my ears. Then came the growl. It started up slow. A low, resonant thrum, like gently plucking a bass string on a guitar. It built up louder and steadier. I sat frozen in place. My brain instantly painted pictures of wolves, wild boars, cougars, all of which could eviscerate my skinny ass in a matter of seconds. What use was running if I was just going to be hunted across the swamp, chased down and torn apart? I looked around for something I could use as a weapon. Anything. A stick, a big rock, a leftover Civil War pistol would have been nice, but I wasn't about to be picky. Anything besides magic leaves and fucking tea lights. The growl went on and on, making the hairs on my arms stand on end. But I was starting to fight down the panic. Trying, anyway. Something about the sound wasn't right. It reverberated too much, like using a conch shell as a trumpet. It was also... there was no other word for it. Wet. They were fucking with me. Of course they were fucking with me. This was some bullshit test of courage, wasn't it? It wouldn't be much of a courage test if there was nothing to test me against. My hands found a rock, jagged and clunky. I kept hold of it as I swung my leg across the other side of the log, turning my back to the sound. The more it went on, the more it sounded artificial and mechanical to my ears. They must have been playing it through one hell of a speaker. I tried whistling as the sound became higher and more shrill. It was starting to hurt my eardrums. I forced an awkward chuckle. These jackoffs better have something else up their sleeves, or else this is going to be a cakewalk. I imagined myself wearing one of those cool jackets again, walking quietly across the campus in a long line, maybe even beating the drum. The growling was starting to crack with an awful staticky warble. I ground my teeth. I wanted to clap my hands over my ears and shut it out, but I couldn't do that. Not now. I couldn't let them see they... Then the growling stopped, and I jumped out of my fucking skin. For some reason, the sudden dead silence was even worse than the unnatural racket. I jumped to my feet and turned to face the tree line once again. Swamp cypress stretched high into the dark sky, swaying softly. Not from wind, though. From movement. Fuck, there was something out there. No, not something. Someone. Jacob, or more likely one of his goons. I strained my eyes for a glimpse of them. It was kind of weird how easily the bright jackets blended into the dark. Or maybe they had taken them off, I don't know. Yeah, probably, it made sense. They were hiding out there in the dark. I hefted the weight of the rock in my hands and smirked. I thought of Jacob's whiny little voice again.
You have proven yourself academically, altruistically, and socially, Samuel.
I wondered if they'd taken the time to look over my extracurriculars. I drew back my arm, carefully balancing the rock. At the next hint of movement, I let a rip. I watched the rock sail, turning end over end until it disappeared into the darkness. The answering thunk seemed to echo across the swamp, but it was quickly swallowed up by the animalistic grunt that followed. I laughed. I couldn't help it. I'd hit one of the Tweedles, probably giving him a nasty bruise on his Neanderthal forehead. I waited for the answering swearing and angry shouts. I wondered if they'd try to give me the boot. Hey, they told me to stay in the goddamn circle. Nobody said anything about throwing something out of the circle, right? When nobody came screaming out of the trees, I'd consider the thought that maybe I'd missed, even if it was hard to believe. Without realizing it, I had moved to the very edge of the circle. I was practically on my toes, squinting. Nothing, I told myself. There's nothing there, you schmuck. Then, suddenly, there was. Something. Something big. I thought it was one of the Tweedles at first, come to avenge his downed brethren, but it was bigger. It was way, way bigger. The thing in the trees hissed, wet and guttural. Something about that sound told me that I had fucked up, and I had fucked up real bad. My stomach turned. Even from the distance, I could make out two bright, shining orbs in the darkness. A pair of eyes glowing like the eyes of a gator cruising in the swamp or some other night predator on the lookout for fresh meat. I stared into the tree line like my knees hadn't started to shake, and I watched the silhouette that those bright eyes were attached to rise itself up to its full height. It was almost human-shaped, easily half again as tall as one of the Tweedles, and there was something about its arms and its legs that were just wrong. Its neck was too long to be human. It cricked at bizarre angles, jerking right then left, like it was smelling something. My mouth had gone dry. It took a few wheezing tries for me to get anything out.
You're gonna have to do better than that, you fucking muppet.
There was a low, threatening rumble. I bit down on the side of my tongue to keep myself from groaning. It was the suspense that had me on edge, I told myself. I hated haunted houses during Halloween, and those were, what, 10 minutes, tops? 10 minutes of reminding myself that it was just some dipshit in a costume. As soon as I saw whatever raggedy swamp thing suit the broken spears had waiting out there for me, I get over it. Slowly the thing in the forest stepped out into the light. And as it did, I felt my resolve turn tail and leave me standing cold. It looked so tall, its eyes swiveled about in a long face. I couldn't tell for sure. The truth was, I didn't wait long enough to figure it out. As the thing took another step and then another, its sloped shoulders heaving, it rose onto its haunches and howled. The howl was what finally broke me. I was done. 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 The spears could keep their fucking club. They could shove it up their asses because I'd had enough. I could have handled hazing. 100 burpees while chanting, "I want to be a spear?" Yeah, sure, no problem. But I hadn't signed up for this Fright Night shit. I only waited long enough for that thing to take one more step. One impossibly long, lurching step before I cracked. No way a little ring of fairy sticks is going to keep me safe. I had to get out of there. I was out of the clearing before I knew it. The ground was mostly peat and compressed sand. Here and there, pools of stagnant water were scattered around like chips on a poker table. I ran parallel to the tree line a ways before plunging in, losing myself in the tall, bare trees, whipped thin and dull white of unbleached bone. I'd started to sweat despite the cold, and somewhere in the wind a flowery, sweet smell of rotting meat hit me in the face like a brick to the teeth. I'd had a thought to try to circle around the thing, find my way back to a path, any path, find the road. Shit, even if I could just figure out where the hell the rest of the spears were lurking, that might be enough of a distraction. Maybe they had a way to fight it off, I don't know, or maybe one of the Tweedles would look more appetizing. At this point, I really didn't care. I heard a solid crack of a branch breaking, followed by a grinding hiss in the woods behind me. It was closer than I expected it to be, and then I tripped and face-planted into the dirt. You know how they say your heart leaps up into your throat when you're scared? Well, it was like mine. It wedged itself up there, and now it was choking me. It hurt to breathe, and suddenly, a memory was replaying itself in my mind like a reel in a family movie. "So what is a Wendigo anyway?" my mother was asking the tour guide. It was orientation day at AU, and we were part of a long line of families trailing out of the student union past the bronze statue standing beyond the double doors. The guide had been smiling, almost sickeningly pleasant through the whole experience. I knew why, of course. We would be among the first graduating class following the bizarre flu outbreak that wreaked havoc on the school just a year earlier. After the so-called incident, the university operations effectively ground to a halt. Alexandria University had earned a new nickname, Hysteria U, and a questionable reputation. In any case, the guide seemed to be expecting the question. "The Wendigo is a creature from native Algonquin folklore. It's said when a human eats the flesh of another human, the Wendigo spirit takes control of their body and turns them into a grotesque monster," she said, gesturing to the 9-foot statue. The statue looked like a plain old stag to me. It stood atop a slab, carved to resemble an outcropping of rock, its head lifted as if to smell the wind. Above it all rose a pair of immense antlers. Bells and streamers hung from the tines, tinkling musically in the breeze. The stag's eyes stared blankly forward. I'd heard of Millie before. I remember looking at the placid figure and being unimpressed. Of course, this is not a statue of a Wendigo. The original statue was ruled to be in poor taste by the university's governing body, in addition to being somewhat culturally insensitive. It was removed in the mid-1980s to much protesting by alumni. But as you can see, the new Millie suits us just fine. Behind me in line, I heard someone mutter, "Tasteless," and snicker before our guide led us on as if she hadn't heard the comment. Then, across the green, I saw the broken spears for the first time, and all thoughts of Millie left my mind. I watched them as they made their slow, snake-like way across the green. At the head of the procession was a young woman holding two halves of a spear and another guy banging on a big bass drum. Each wore a colorful Native American-style jacket and a chest piece made of many rows of long beads or bone. Their chins were all pointing straight forward, chests out, jaws locked in a grim determination. They stepped with a courage and a confidence I had coveted my entire high school career. I imagined myself wearing one of those jackets, the chest piece, the overconfident stare. I was horny with the thought. The broken spears walked in a single perfect line, silent except for the flat rhythmic beating of the processional drum. It had been so easy to scoff then. Now, laying on the ground, bruised and aching, I knew better. It wasn't worth it. It hadn't been worth it. The form was deep in the shadows of the trees, but I could make out the long body, long arms, and above it all, towering 4 feet above its head, a pair of sharp, jagged antlers. It shifted its wide shoulders and shambled its way through the trees. It again pulled itself up to its full height, and had I been standing, I wouldn't have come eye to eye with its midsection. Its eyes, when I did meet them, burned like bright candles. Mephitic meat and matted fur sloughed away from pink ribs, cracked and dripping marrow. Its face was the skinless skull of a deer or a wolf. It opened its gaping maw and I could see a row of razor-sharp teeth. The smell was something like onions and fresh vomit, like oily, forgotten things. The smell was death, and behind it all was the hunger. A hunger so deep and so dark that I felt it in my bones, eyes, hair. A final tingling hiss from a throat that was mostly exposed tendon and vertebrae. And it leapt.
Thank you all for joining us tonight, Wendigos, and a very special thanks to Charlotte and Keel. May all your dreams come true. A friendly reminder that we are currently accepting stories at alexandriaarchives@gmail.com. Why keep a secret when you can share it with the world? Submissions should follow guidelines listed on our website, alexandriaarchives.com, and should not be sent in via brick. Email will do just fine. Windows are very expensive to replace. Now get to bed already, Wendigos. It's dark out there.